about the series of studies that we'll be talking about today is that probably 80% of the country's work in home health care is represented right here today. And seriously, I'm sure that's maybe even an overstatement. And we're very excited to be doing it, and we hope to be doing a lot more of it. But whether that happens remains to be seen. What I'll be telling you about is a very particular aspect we've been looking at this past year with our sample from New York City. We're going to be looking at some of the barriers. We've also been looking at, of course, the injuries, the needle stick injuries, the barriers at the individual, organizational, and structural levels. But here I'm just going to be talking about a little bit about our data so you can get a sense of it and about some of the barriers. So I think we don't have to go too much into the sector itself, so I'll just spend just a couple of minutes on that, and then I'll tell you about our study and wrap it up with conclusions and recommendations. Many of you probably know that this is the fastest growing sector in all of healthcare in America. And it's probably not just America, it's probably worldwide, because last year I was at the urban health meetings and many, many people came up to my poster and they said, oh, this is a growing thing in my country, in Africa, Nigeria, in Japan, many countries, Australia. They're really moving in the same direction as we are, which is moving patient care out of the hospital as quickly as we can into the home care setting. So that's what's driving the growth. A lot of people don't realize that it's a very large workforce. It's very hard for us to get our hands around the exact number. I've seen numbers ranging from 350,000 to 800,000. Then recently I've seen numbers to 1.3 million. Depends if you're looking at BLS or depends on the database that you're looking at. But I think, and hopefully we'll have time at the end to maybe between us come to some decision on what is the sample and who are you including. Are you including personal care assistants? Are you including family home health aides? Are you including RNs as well as your aides? So it's kind of a moving target, but it's a large workforce. And of course, it's a huge patient population. When you look at the very, very sparse literature, I've been reading and writing quite a bit about home care in the past year. In fact, I have three very recent papers that are just up online this past week or so, or just about to hit online if anyone would like copies of them. I think they give you a good overview of the field, of the sector as a whole, and I'm happy to send you the PDF of that. But when you look through that literature, you see that it pretty much falls into these three major categories of what are the occupational health hazards. They are usually ergonomic, no surprises there, lots of violence, and psychosocial work stress. I think you can see from Fang's just her presentation a minute ago that there's a big issue here. Delivery of care in a home care setting is very, very different than a hospital setting. There are barrier issues and boundary issues, tremendous boundary issues that we found out early on in our study when we did our walkthroughs and site visits and shadowing. A lot of these workers become part of the family. And let's face it, when you're taking care of a family member, how often do you wear disposable gloves or protective gear or anything like that? So it's a very unique kind of setting, and I'm just delighted that NIOSH finally decided to really take a good hard look at them. So in our study, as I said, it's New York City, very, very difficult, as you alluded to, Sherry, very hard to reach out to this population for both RNs and aides of all types. They're really a moving target, and lots of issues about legibility of English, use of English. In our questionnaire for the aides, we actually took it down to a fourth grade reading level, and even then we had to sometimes read the questions out loud with a translator right there. I don't have to tell this group, probably IRB issues are a nightmare now, even for this kind of more social science type of research, and it becomes very problematic. So Fang, I'm amazed that you were able to do these in three languages. I can't even imagine trying to do that. And I do have these questionnaires available if anyone would like copies of them. So in our final sample, we collected data from 738 RNs, a little over 1,500 aides. It took us about 4.5 months, not for the aides, which turned out to be relatively amazingly easy, because we went to the site where all of New York City sends their aides for their pre-employment physicals and annual checkups. So we just popped ourselves down at that facility and waited it out. and we used a $1 scratch-off lottery ticket, which brought them in droves. The R, that's a single most best recruitment tool. The RNs were a lot harder, and we did use a multi-method technique to recruit our sample for that. And this is what we found in terms of injury. I converted these to 1,000 person years, but basically, if you were thinking more usual 100 person years, that would be 6.4 injuries per RN, per 100 person years of RNs. So I moved up the decimal point so you can see it in a whole number. So that means for every 1,000 AIDS, 40 of them had an injury in the prior year. For every 1,000 AIDS, 37 had an ergonomic injury, an upper body injury, 48 RNs. And for needle sticks, you can see many, many fewer AIDS. But actually, that number is in itself surprising because AIDS, let's face it, are not supposed to be using needles. But these were their patients with diabetes, needles left around. But truly, from what I could gather, some of them are doing medications like that. But I was very, very interested to see these data in particular. There is tremendous abuse going on in some of these home settings. Remember, this is out of sight of a lot of supervision, in some cases any supervision. They're alone in New York City. They're in very potentially dangerous areas. They are in potentially dangerous households. And what I found very interesting about these data, remembering this is the same pool, essentially, of the sample frame is the same. So why are our RNs saying so much more than our AIDS? And the other colleagues and I were talking about this the past few weeks, and either the AIDS aren't seeing it, they don't recognize it, they don't perceive it as a threat, they're turning their eye, they don't want to lose their job. Just that one piece about getting fired, I think, is telling. They have to look away. They have so much at stake. Sometimes they are the single household breadwinner in incredibly impoverished situations, so they can't afford to lose that job. But we have to tease this out. Whether or not I'll be able to do it from this, I don't know. But our next step, our participatory action research teams, a follow-up to this where we show them these data, and then maybe I can tease it out. But I find this interesting, and especially interesting, that regardless of whether you're an RN or an aide, 8% are experiencing racial ethnic discrimination on the job. Now, Jane, you have your hands on some of these numbers in healthcare as a whole. Do these numbers kind of jive with what you've seen in, I know you've done nursing homes. Are these numbers in the range, at least somewhere within the confidence interval? Yeah. And how about this violence? I mean, the threat or actual physical assault, 8% of the AIDS reported that in the previous year. 16% of the RNs. Pretty amazing. It seems high to me. Then we looked at infectious disease. 11% reported that they had some work-related infectious disease that they caught in their job, on their job in the previous year. Before I go further, I just want to say we did ask questions about bird flu because in New York City, the home health care sector has been written into the New York City bird flu plan as the ones who will respond to people who are on home quarantine or home isolation, unbeknownst, I should say, to the home health care agencies or, of course, the workers. They were written in the plan. I got a copy of it. It was that thick. I actually read through it one day, and lo and behold, under quarantine, you know, the guidance under that, comes up home health care. So, of course, I went back, talked to BNS, talked to all these groups. Nobody knew anything about it. But what's scary to me is that in our questionnaire, we actually asked them, are you willing to turn up and show up for home quarantine duty? And the numbers are frightening, but not totally surprising. 42% of the RNs said they would. Only 42% in our healthcare worker study in the hospitals, roughly about 40-50% said they would, so they were right around the same thing. But only 12% of our aides said they would report to duty and take care of a patient on home quarantine for bird flu. That is a scary, scary statistic for a lot of reasons. But anyway, and this gets back, I think, Fang, to what you pointed out so beautifully. Our two studies are, confirming ourselves. Okay, I'm finishing up. Same kind of issues, lack of awareness, lack of support, communication challenges, a lot of work stresses. Our people in urban settings, I'm sure all over, mass transit is a nightmare. They are going some cases, 3 or 4 different patients in the same day, always using buses, trains. It's really insane. A lot of organizational issues, what you call institutional problems. We also see policy issues. Our agencies tell us, especially the small mom-and-pop agencies, 2 or 3 workers, 5 or 6 patients, they're telling us they just cannot afford to pay more for the resources that they need. And, of course, the home environment, which you pointed out so beautifully, Fang, such a terrible issue for so many of our workers coming into a completely kind of uncontrolled setting. It creates a challenge. And these are our recommendations. A lot more work needs to be done. We are simply scratching the surface of this important sector. So I want to stop here and make sure I have room for everyone else. Thank you so much for your attention.